Hello, and welcome to You've Got Time, an Orange is the New Black podcast. I'm your host, Erin Quayle, and this week, before we dive into the episode, I did want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the news this week, or last week, I suppose, with the unfortunate shootings of both Philando Castile and Alton Sterling, and then following that, the shootings of police officers in Dallas. The fatal shootings of police officers in Dallas during a peaceful protest. So this world is a little crazy and things are going on. And the Black Lives Matter movement is definitely, if you've watched the entire season of Orange is the New Black, or even if you know about the systemic, racial bias in prisons and in the justice system, it definitely hits home for Orange is the New Black, as well as, personally for me as a human on this earth. So, on Friday, I had the day off and I was going and sort of looking around on the internet and looking at every article I could find and trying to make sense of all of this. And this podcast is a way for me to kind of try to make sense of it all and try to find, some sort of solutions, no matter how small. So I came across a couple websites and put a couple articles up on the Facebook as well as Twitter accounts for You've Got Time podcast, and I hope that you'll check them out. One of which is Campaign Zero. It's a organization that recommends different ways to eliminate police brutality in today's society, and also recently just came up with an interactive map where you can find your representatives for your state and also see how far your state has come with implementing different police brutality laws and things like that. So that's a really great site that I recommend you check out. And, last week, Jillian and I on the podcast talked a little bit about taking action in the form of contacting your representatives. And so this is something you can do. You can go on the Campaign Zero website and sort of look around and, take a look at what your state is doing or not doing, contact your reps, and, make a difference in a little way. So aside from that, there's, there's the episode itself that we talked about this week, and I had the opportunity to have Sandy Perez, my fantastic co-editor at Head and Remote, on the podcast. And we've been meaning to have her on for a while, and I actually found a recording app that worked. Yay! So we were able to talk, even though she's actually all the way in Dallas, where the tragedy occurred a couple days ago. And we had the opportunity to talk a little bit about that and talk about, how the community feels after something like that happened. I actually have some personal experience with that as well. I live in Newtown, Connecticut, actually, and I grew up here. And so, I not that the two tragedies are similar in a lot of ways, but, when there's a big gun shooting and people feel like a little hopeless or a little unsafe, communities tend, in my limited experience, to come together. And so you'll hear Sandy and I talk a little bit about that on the podcast as well. At the very beginning, at the top of the podcast. So we also definitely talk about the episode. So we get into all of the nitty gritty of the episode. We get into, how bonkers Healy is and the altercation between Doggett and Charlie, and what that kind of means. And we'll have all sorts of links for you about cool things about consent and videos. So, you can pass those on to maybe teenagers or college age kids in your life who may need a little refresher or a little information on what consent actually does mean. In addition, we don't really go too far in depth about Sophia's solitary confinement, but in my research for this episode, I found a couple really amazing solitary confinement activist websites, one of which is solitarywatch.com, and the other is blackandpink.org. And the really cool thing about blackandpink.org, it's an organization that focuses on LGBT populations in prison and in solitary confinement in particular, and kind of circling back to talking about things that you can do, on blackandpink.org, you can sign up for a pen pal in solitary confinement. So, you know, that's a little something you can do to reach out to someone and make a difference in, you know, in someone's lives or in someone's life directly. So I definitely, you know, recommend that you check out both of those websites, and we'll have those both as links on the piece at hiddenremote.com as well as on you'vegottimepodcast.com. So in addition, we can be contacted on Twitter at You've Got Time Pod, and on Facebook at facebook.com/You've Got Time Podcast, as well as our email at you'vegottimepodcast@gmail.com. So I hope you guys enjoy the podcast, and please, you know, feel free to reach out and contact me if you find any other sites where something can be done, or even if you're doing something in your community that you want to talk about or anything like that, because I'm always interested to hear about all of those things going on and what we can do even in small ways to help our communities. So thanks so much. Enjoy the episode. I guess we can just jump right in. And I know, you know, you and I talked a little bit about, you know, since this is a podcast that kind of focuses on a lot of different things other than just the show, like the themes of the show, and you live in Dallas, and that, you know, horrific tragedy happened in Dallas recently, I did want to kind of check in with you and see, you know, from a first person perspective, how, you know, how Dallas feels and like what's kind of going on there.
It was definitely scary, and it was a little hard to believe at first.
Mm-hmm.
I went there with my son. It was the park I went to is probably one or two blocks away from where it happened, and it's so weird. Like, I don't want to say it was a sign or anything, but he loves parks. He loves going out. He loves playing with the kids. But that day, he wasn't feeling it. He wanted to go home.
Yeah.
We had an ice cream. We walked around for a bit. Then, you know, I was like, okay, fine, let's go home. Soon as we get home, I check Twitter, and, you know, everything's happening. And I was like, wow, we were right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like only a couple blocks away.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So we wouldn't have been in the middle of it, but we still would have been trapped there, because I think even residents that live in those buildings couldn't go home, so we would have been there for a really long time.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure everything got blocked off, and
yeah,
you know, your son would have been so scared, and I can't imagine what that would be like in the middle of a big city. You know, tragedies like that happen far too often in my opinion. And you and I have talked a little on, you know, online about the fact that, you know, I live in Newtown, and there was a shooting here, and it's hard after something like that happens in your town to kind of get back, you know, like there's no really getting back to normal. It's kind of just accepting it and moving on. It's a hard thing to do as a citizen, even if you haven't, you know, firsthand experienced that tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sadness was the biggest emotion everyone felt here. Like, you could feel it the next day just going out. It felt almost a little awkward as well. Like, you see someone and you kind of want to say something, but you don't know what to say. So, yeah, it was a little awkward and sad. It still is a little bit, but I think everyone's getting through it. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to see, you know, a lot of positivity has come out from that also.
Yeah, yeah. And in a big city like Dallas, like I said, you know, I'm from Newtown, which is like super, I think we're like 50,000 people, and Dallas is probably like 50 million. Well, maybe not that big, but it's like a big city. So, so it's a little different, but I think there is still a feeling, like you said, of like coming together, and like, we're all, you know, citizens of the same place, and we have to like stand strong in the face of, difficulties and in the face of tragedy. I think that's a good thing. I'm happy to hear that Dallas feels like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. And the, so you guys can go back to your park or no? Is there like, I don't know.
Last I heard, it was still closed.
Oh, wow.
It might be because, you know, the crime scene, they still want to investigate that area.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it should be opened.
Oh, good. Yeah. I mean, by now. How big is Dallas? I have no real, like, conception of how big Dallas is or, like, how many people are there or anything mm-hmm. like that.
It's pretty big, especially because we count the surrounding cities. Like, we just say we're from Dallas. Like, technically, I live in Garland. Mm-hmm. But Dallas is really close. That's where the shopping malls are, the parks. That's where you go for fun.
Right, right.
So everyone in the surrounding cities would just say, you know, Dallas. So
right.
It's pretty big, yeah.
It's kind of like a borough in New York City, kind of. Like, it's, like, next to it, but it's not, like, technically it, but it's right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I definitely hope that Dallas can, you know, and I know that Dallas, I read a couple articles. I probably should have given you a heads up on this one, but I heard that Dallas was, like, the number one or, like, one of the leaders in trying to, like, eliminate police brutality. So it was definitely, you know, kind of really ironic that the tragedy happened there uh-huh. instead of anywhere else. 'Cause the, chief of police is so proactive in trying to, like, implement policies and things like that. So, so it sounds like, you know, at least that's getting some press too, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It's always some good, when good things come out of it, it's always a bonus, even though it's, you know, a horrific thing. If something mm-hmm. positive can come out of it, I always feel a little better when something positive comes out of tragedy.
No, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But kind of getting, you know, getting to the meat of the episode, we're talking about the fourth episode of Orange is the New Black. And, you know, for people who have watched the whole season, you know, it's kind of, or people who have even read a little bit about the whole season, it's kind of, you know, obvious why we're talking about Dallas and we're talking about all these big issues, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff like that. But, you know, we're trying not to spoil things for people who are going episode by episode. So, so this is the fourth episode, and obviously this episode focuses a lot on Healy, who, you know, we'll definitely talk a lot about him a little later, but kind of before we dive into, you know, Healy's crazy, there are a couple things in the episode that are, like, setting up things for future episodes, and, you know, you and I have both seen all of them, but for people who haven't, you know, we'll just talk a little bit about those first. And kind of the first thing is the panty stuff with Piper and Maria. And it's like, it's kind of heating up. They're getting into arguments. They're kind of, I don't really know how I feel about that storyline. Kind of watching these episodes a second time, I'm kind of like just done with it.
Yeah, that storyline feels like it came out of nowhere almost.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Maria. She kind of just kept to herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden she decided to be, you know, like, kingpin of, like, panties.
Yeah, for no, like, she could have done a lot of other different things, right? But then she was like, yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And Piper's attitude, it's gonna come back and bite her, but we can't mm-hmm. spoil anything.
Yes. That's definitely true. But you're right, though. Like, Maria was kind of like this woman that was, like, off to the sidelines, and, you know, we didn't get a flashback on her until this season. And, you know, we saw some stuff about her, you know, she had her baby and that was really difficult for her. And then her husband or boyfriend took the baby and said, you know, I'm not bringing her anymore, which was, you know, that was really tough, but we didn't see any of that, like mm-hmm. like mob boss or whatever, or crime ring in Rhea. It's weird.
Yeah, and she has a baby, more reason to keep her head down and mm-hmm. just wait things out. She could get out of good behavior. So yeah, I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, and it, like, you know, it's definitely, it's weird because you, like, Maria, from everything we've seen of her, she's been, like, conscientious and, like, doing what she needs to do. Like you said, keeping her head down. And now all of a sudden, like, she's just like, oh, well, like, my people are here. And oh, what's that? The lady with the crazy hair. She's like, oh, we should, you know, we're going to rule this place. And then Maria's just like, all right, we'll do it. That's fine. So yeah. It wasn't really, to me, it wasn't really in her character to do that.
Mm-hmm. No.
But yeah, like you said, that'll kind of, you know, we'll see more of that as the season progresses. And Maria and Piper, neither one of them end up walking away from it with, like, a positive outcome.
No.
Yeah. So, well then, so elsewhere, Tasty is kind of getting comfortable at her job with Caputo. And this is kind of, you know, Orange is the New Black was originally a comedy and now it's, you know, drama, but they still have those funny parts in it. And Tasty was really, really funny in this episode. I really kind of loved her. You know, she's kind of taking her job seriously, but she's also kind of taking advantage of certain things, especially that label maker, which I thought was hilarious.
Tasty's hilarious. I love that too with the label maker. She was just going all out. Mm-hmm. And she's probably getting paid the same or less, but she's, you know, taking advantage of it, just enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that was a pretty awesome label maker that they let her use because it had all the different fonts and stuff. Yeah. I feel like most label makers just have like the one font. You have to use the one. I don't know. Maybe I haven't had a label maker in a really long time, but.
No, she definitely got the good one.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so she's, and you know, her friends are getting jealous of her and she's like, you know, says, oh, I have the ear of the warden. Like last time she was like, I'm the hand of the warden and now she's the ear of the warden. So she's all the different body parts of Joe Caputo. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's, and, you know, Suzanne Crazy Eyes, she wants to like get information from Tasty and so does Cindy and everyone's kind of like coming at her because they think that she's in like a position of power when, you know, she kind of is, but she's kind of not.
That was really fun when she called the library for information.
Yeah. And what did she say? She was like something about Beyonce. I don't remember, but it was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Or Oprah. I don't know.
Oh, Oprah. Yeah, something. I think. She was like, yeah. I forgot which one. But yeah, she was asking like these crazy questions. And I was like, if I was on the other line of a library, what mm-hmm. what would I say? I don't know. I would be like, this is an interesting phone call.
And it's actually funny that she tries to get celebrity gossip info. Mm-hmm. You know, I would imagine they want to contact people. Oh, but then again, they don't really have family, most of them. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Yeah, Tasty. Tasty, I guess. Yeah, we saw because in the previous episode, she doesn't really, mm-hmm. you know, she gets out and she doesn't really have anywhere to go because V was her, unfortunately, V was preying on her as a young child. So as a result, she didn't really develop a family. I mean, she had family, but they were all drug dealers. And I mean, not that that's a bad thing, but you know, the one guy she was really close to died and then V was awful. Well, V killed him, right?
Yeah.
And then V was awful. So Tasty, as charismatic as Tasty is, her real family's inside Litchfield. But like you said, you know, maybe call and just research some legal options or something like that. But Tasty, mm-hmm. Tasty's not really looking forward, you know, looking that far ahead right now, I guess. But
yeah, no.
But yeah, but
she wants to know what Beyonce's up to.
Yeah. I mean, don't we all? It's like that's what half of celebrity gossip is. It's all about Beyonce.
Yeah.
Because she's awesome. But mm-hmm. so yeah, like you said, you know, looking ahead, you know, there's this storyline that kind of runs a little bit close to, you know, where Tasty was in season one, because Lita gets the news that she's getting out, but she's, you know, she's worried. She's like, what did she say? She said, they're evicting me, which is kind of different than what you might consider someone, like what someone would think when they get out of jail. So how did you, I don't know, how did you, I mean, we saw Tasty before kind of go through that, but how did you feel about Alita? Because Alita's got, you know, she's got Daya too, which is stressful because she's got her daughter who she's leaving behind.
But she also has, like, I think 3 or 4 other kids out there. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that she wasn't like more happy. She seemed kind of sad and bummed to be leaving. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, cheer up, you're getting out. Mm-hmm. But I listened to your other podcast about how they don't have any help once they leave.
Yeah, it's
and
tough.
They are set up to fail, so that's kind of why she was so disappointed.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as I know, just from, you know, working with women that have come to, you know, substance abuse treatment as part of DCF, DCF here is the Department of Children and Families. I think it's different in different states, but it's basically the organization that, you know, either helps you get the custody back to your kid or they protect the children, you know, in whatever mm-hmm. state you're in. I think in New York, it's something different. I'm sure it's something different in Texas too, but they, you know, they want to reunite people with their mothers, but it's a process. It's like a long difficult process where you have to do a lot of things to prove that you can get your kids back after, you know, running a drug ring from your kitchen. So, you know, and Alita is someone who's always kind of gone for that easy money, you know, like everything's been, like she was kind of chose the easy path. So she's looking forward and she's like, oh my God, I have to do all this stuff and it's going to be hard. And like, I don't know if I can do that. And I love when Gloria comes in and gives her like the little pep talk. She's like, just do it. She's like, you're Puerto Rican, you have family, you have friends, and just like go and find those people and make your connections. And that's, you know, that's all people, a lot of times that's all they can do because they don't really get a lot of help from, you know, the state.
Yeah, they don't. I'm not sure if this happened in the same episode, in episode 4. It's not a big spoiler if it didn't, but you know when she was talking about how she was going to open her nail salon
and then
they kind of rain on her parade?
I know. Yeah, I think that is a little, but still, like, it's a little later, but like you said, it's not that big of a spoiler, but it's like, you know, she has these lofty dreams and she thinks she's just going to like open a nail salon and like, and you know, Daya's like, what are you talking about? You have to have like 8,000 things to do. You have to have money.
Yeah, you need a license and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she was talking to, I forgot her name.
Gloria? Her friend?
No, the celebrity that's in prison with them.
Oh, Judy King?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she asked Judy King, oh, how much would you pay for these nails? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, 40. And, you know, she's like, oh, that's what I thought. I was just making sure.
Yeah.
I'm like, aw, she thinks, you know, she's going to open her nail salon.
Yeah. I mean, and
so that was sad.
And she could, right? Like, if she, like, I mean, dreams are, like, last podcast, Jillian and I were talking about how there's, like, so much paperwork when you're a counselor, but there's always, like, crap that you have to do on the way to your dream, you know? Like, there's always stuff that you don't want to do. Like, okay, doing nails is fun, or, you know, like whatever is you know, the thing that you want to do, but there's all this other stuff that comes with it.
Yeah, she could do it, but it's just really tough for her to get back on her feet with little to no help when she gets out.
Yeah, but she's definitely, I mean, I don't know, I have hope for Alita.
I don't want to see her back. I want to see more of her, but outside of prison, I don't want her to go back.
Right. Yeah, but it's hard though, right? Because we're like, if she's not in prison, we're gonna definitely get less of her. And I like, I like her. Like, I like her exchange with Gloria, and I like her exchange with Daya. And but there's definitely more to come with that throughout the season. But while Alita's kind of getting out, Bursette is in the shoe. And there, you know, that's definitely something that's been in the news a little bit lately with solitary confinement and things like that. And she's, you know, she's in there for no reason. And this is, I think this is the first time we see her, right? Like, we've heard people talk about her, but this is the first time we see her in the season, I think.
I think it's the first time we see Nikki.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh, yeah. And Nikki, that was so confused. I was like, are they, I guess when she set the fire, they brought them down to Max for like safekeeping. I don't know what happened there. Or maybe the shoe is in the Max. I don't know how that all worked out. Cause you only see her for a second.
That was confusing.
Yeah.
That was confusing because it happened so fast. She barely set the fire and suddenly everyone's already outside. And the guards opened the door immediately. I'm like, that was fast.
Yeah. And Nikki's there too. I guess maybe Nikki was in the shoe. I don't know.
Ooh, or she was cleaning the hallways. I think that's her job, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that was it. And then she sees Bursette and she's like, oh, and then she realizes that she's there. But yeah, we only see Nikki for like, I remember watching that when I like first binged and I was like, what's happening? Like, where, what? I was like so happy to see her, but I had no idea what was, like, I didn't get what was going on.
Did I skip a few episodes?
Yeah. And then you don't see her again until, well, you see her later, but you know, that's like the only time you see her in this episode, and it's like, oh there's Nikki, wait, what's happening? but she sets the fire and she floods her cell and she wants to get out, and no one can give her an answer as to why she's there, because there's no, I mean, it's for her own protection, but you know, that's, it's not really the best place for people to be, especially when they're, you know, struggling with issue. I mean, Bursette's not necessarily, you know, she doesn't have any serious mental health issues, but she's, you know, she's struggling in her own way, just by virtue of being in jail. But I thought that was really she was kind of putting herself in danger. I was like, I wouldn't want to like stand in disgusting toilet water for hours and hours. And
no, I agree. And then I won't say what she does later, which I think is in another episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think I would have done any of that. I would just patiently wait it out. I don't want to make it worse. But that's just me. She's really brave.
She is brave. I know. And then she like lights the thing on fire. She smashes the. I was like, that's so smart. I wouldn't know you. I mean, I guess if you have time to sit and think, you think of like maybe she was just bored. I mean, I don't think it was just boredom, but she's actively trying to leave and get out. And I mean, I definitely admire her for that. It's just, you know, Caputo's not being reasonable. He, you know, and that's another one of those storylines that's kind of left like the panty ring. It's kind of like left over from last season. And it's, I don't know. It was just, it's interesting to see, you know, but it's also kind of like, oh, I want Laverne Cox back on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, Caputo took on more than he can handle.
He did.
Definitely.
He did. And he's trying, I guess. I don't know. I go back and forth with him. I'm like, he's trying, but he's also wrapped up in this, you know, new thing. And he's, you know, I don't know. He's trying his best, I guess, but he's feeling overwhelmed. Yeah, but yeah, so like the kind of the last little loose end in the episode, other than Healy, who, you know, like I said, is a big part of the episode, is the talk between Doggett and Charlie, the guard who, you know, assaulted her, raped her last season. And, you know, it's interesting because she has a couple encounters with Charlie throughout the season. I think even in a previous episode, she kind of like, saw him and like ran away, and or maybe not, maybe that was this episode, but this is the first time they really talk, and you know, it's a short little scene, but it means a lot. And you know, it's I don't know, I think it raises a lot of questions, but and it also makes you like feel a weird way, I think. So how did that make you feel?
Doggett has changed a lot from the first season.
Oh my god,
remember her?
Yeah.
Dance Techie, like she's unrecognizable now. So there's that. But also with Charlie, I was really surprised. I think there really are some people who are ignorant to rape. And, you know, she confronted him finally and asked him about that. And he was like, oh, I love you. It doesn't count because I love you. And she's like, no, it does count.
Yeah.
So that was frustrating to see. And he I don't want to defend him, but he did seem sorry. He did seem like, oh, I really screwed up. But then again, I don't know how. So it's mixed feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like horrified that he thinks or she thinks that he attacked her. He's like, what? I thought that was, you know, and it's, you know, I saw some people online saying like, oh, maybe that's how he saw, you know, like his parents behave, like love is anything's okay as long as you say you're in love, or, you know, and it's so important to teach, you know, I think a lot of times too, like a lot of states and schools don't get sex education treatment, or they don't get you know, counseling on what consent is or information on how to have safe sex, because abstinence is like the only way. So kids only get to learn through like what they see. And I think Charlie's definitely a prime example of that. And, you know, whether or not we forgive him, you know, is a whole other question. But he definitely has some sort of skewed notions of what sex and love are.
Yeah, that was confusing. But
so it's actually really funny because do you watch John Oliver, last week tonight? He's on, I think he's on Sundays on HBO, but he's not on right now. He's on a break, but, he, like last year he did like this video about like consent and sexual education, and Laverne Cox was actually in it, and it was really good. And I was like, oh my God, they should show this at all schools, and everyone would be like informed, and it'd be great, and people would, there'd be less confusion. And, so I think, you know, if Charlie had seen that video, maybe he would have a little bit more of a frame of mind. Maybe he'd know a little bit better what consent is. And is not so. So he needs to learn from Sophia.
I'll have to watch that video.
Yeah, it's good. I'm gonna put it in a link because I like loved that video. I thought it was really good and very. I think like Kumail Nanjiani is in it from Silicon Valley and like a bunch of other celebrities, and it's really Nick Offerman is in it. It's really funny, but it's like educational at the same time because you know a lot of teenagers and young adults don't really know those things and they have to find them out on their own, which you know it's good and bad, but.
And that's actually stuff that's going on in the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With parties and, yeah.
Yeah, and whether, you know, especially on college campuses, you know, young kids yeah. are drinking and getting into it, and then they mm-hmm. don't know what, you know, consent is, and they, you know, they go too far. Or they go too far for other reasons, too. But I think if we start bringing consent into the conversation more, then people would be more aware of it.
Yeah, that's what I like about Orange is the New Black also. They hit on stuff that is actually going mm-hmm. on currently. Like the finale, you know.
Yeah.
That's also kind of going on. Mm-hmm. So I like
it
is, that.
And it's like kind of, you know, it's interesting because like with even like political shows like House of Cards and stuff like that, they tap into stuff that's like gonna happen, like happening in the future, or maybe it just makes us more aware of things that are happening. But yeah, the finale is definitely, you know, once we get there, it's definitely something that, you know, needs to be addressed in our society. It's, you know, there's a lot of the Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter stuff and inequality and our, you know, our incarceration system, which is certainly broken. and we see that throughout here too. We see it, you know, we even see it with Healy. Like Healy.
I know.
He's like, and this episode was so hard because, you know, it's easy to like hate Healy, but it's also easy to feel bad for him. So he's another one that it's hard to kind of like Charlie, it's hard to kind of mm-hmm. feel one way about him.
I do feel bad for Healy. He seems really troubled. I would even say traumatized mm-hmm. From what has happened in his life. I feel like he helps people to try help himself and make himself feel better. Mm-hmm. But he's in no place to help someone. So he just ends up hurting them and hurt himself. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, I don't know if you noticed that he kind of just jumps from person to person mm-hmm. to help. Because he was helping Judy King, or he thought, and then she has to be transferred, and he was so mad. But then he saw Lolly, and he's like, oh, next.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's kind of what he does, and he's going about it the wrong way.
Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, we see, you know, obviously he has the issues with his mom, where he felt like, it was so sad, because he feels, like, responsible for the fact that his mom ran away. When it, you know, he was like, what, like probably 8 or 9 maybe in that? I don't, maybe a little yeah. older. I'm not sure. I'm really bad with like gauging kids' ages. You have a kid. How old is Healy? I don't know.
No, he looks about 9, 10.
Maybe something like that. But I mean, that's like an enormous responsibility for a little kid. And, you know, his dad didn't really seem to be, like helping that much. He kind of just seemed to be like, oh, mm-hmm. she's getting treatment and she'll get better, and that was it.
Yeah that was a really sad flashback. Mm-hmm. And then when he tried to help the homeless lady,
I know but I actually my sad. Bigger issue with that whole thing is as a therapist, I like, he was dating one of his clients, and I was like, well, of course Healy's dating one of his clients, because that makes total sense. But at the same time, like mm-hmm. when there's like relationship ethics like that breached, I don't know why, what it is about me, but like maybe I was just, when I in all my training I was just like drilled into you, like, don't, you know, you can't date your clients, you can't have personal relationships with them, because it, you know, it undermines the entire, like, it's more about you then than it is about them. And clearly Healy wanted it to be, you know, every time Healy counsels someone, it's about him, because he's looking yeah. to fill something. But I was like, oh God, Healy, why are you dating your client? Like, of course you're dating your client. But yeah, he's just looking for connection in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
And with that poor homeless lady too. That poor homeless lady.
I know.
Yeah. He's like, just stay. And he's so sad, and just stay and have dinner. And, mm-hmm. and he just wants someone to connect with that he can feel like he has control, because he didn't have it when he was younger. Mm-hmm. And he's like going over and over with all these women trying to deal with that. But
yeah, it goes back to the control thing. He needs to feel like he's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really not. He needs counseling.
He does
himself.
Need counseling. I think he went to counseling, right? In like season two or three, like a couple seasons ago, and he like called the therapist a bunch of names and screamed at her. And she was like, you have anger issues. And he was like, yeah, of course I have anger issues. But he's definitely not well. And, you know, when it's hard to, you know, help other people when you're not in the right mindset. Mm-hmm. And Healy is definitely not. So I've said this before on the podcast, but I definitely wouldn't want him as my therapist, because he's, you know, he's helpful. He is kind of helpful because, you know, he helped Pensatucky in previous season, but he's helpful when he wants to feel good about himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why he's a counselor, like who allowed that.
Awesome. Mm. Yeah, who let that? I mean, he probably got through school okay, and you know, I mean, just like in any profession, there are people that shouldn't really be in the profession they're in. It's, you know, he's, I mean, and maybe if he dealt with his issues, maybe he'd be a good counselor, because he does seem to kind of understand Lolly. He's trying to understand her, and although he's not really trying to understand Judy King. He's just kind of like wants to boss Judy King around.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy, though. I don't understand how he, in his right mind, thinks that he can help Lolly. Lolly's clearly to anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, totally nuts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think with he wants to kind of treat her, you know, treat her like a person. And I think that that's really important. And he does kind of, like, he helps her get into like a positive mind state, I guess, by the end of the session. Like, she comes out and she's like, oh, I imagined all of that. And when she really didn't, but she's like, oh, and she does feel better after she leaves his office. She's like, oh, this is top-notch counseling, the best counseling. And Alex is like, what is going on?
Yeah, that was funny. What part was it? Where she kept asking, oh, do you know about the K-83? Oh, no, it's classified. I would be like, oh, okay, you know? But at least he's good at calming her down.
Yeah, he did. I mean, and he did it in his own way. He was like, oh, you hear angels, because that's what he said his mom heard. And so he's got his own idea of how things should go. But he's also treating her like a lot more gently than he would like Judy King. Like, he's nasty to Judy King because Judy King doesn't really need him. But when Lolly needs him, he's like, oh, you need me, so I'm going to be nice to you.
He was also nice to Piper before Piper did anything.
True, yeah. That's definitely true. And I don't really know what happened with Pensatucky. Because him and Pensatucky were friends for a while. And then they were not friends anymore. Maybe they still are. I don't think they like had any interaction in this season, really.
Yeah, I don't think I even saw them together, now that I think about it.
Yeah, because they were. I can't remember if it was season two or three, but they had the safe space thing. And he like gave her...
I remember
and
that.
He gave her Oreos, and he told her to stay away from Boo because she was a lesbian. he has something against lesbians too.
He got her new teeth.
Yeah, he did get her new teeth. Well, wait, did he or Caput one of them? Oh, he did. He did, because he knew he saw Piper and her fighting, and so he was like, "You need to stay quiet. So here's some new teeth." But that was like for his own good too. He's just always kind of looking out for himself, even though he thinks he's a really good guy.
Yeah.
He really thinks he's a good guy, but he's not necessarily a good guy. But especially, like, you know, like I said, with the relationship with Judy King, he's just really, he just wants to control her because she's powerful and famous. And if he can control her, it's kind of like that Michael Scott thing. Like, if I can make the person who's making everyone else laugh, I can, you know, I'm the funniest. He's like, if I can control the person with the most power, then I'm the most powerful. So it's like a very like childish way to think of things. And Healy's like a big baby.
He is. Yep.
Yeah, but he's, so, you know, towards the end of the episode, I think, is really his session with Lolly, right? Like, he's sitting with Lolly and talking to her and, like, working through stuff because she freaks out in the garden because of the drone. And Piscatella actually surprised me in that scene, too, because he's like, the inmate is having a psychotic break. You need to help her. Like, you can't just stand here and laugh, which kind of surprised me because he's not really the nicest of people.
Yeah, I thought he would, you know, encourage them. So that was surprising. I hate him later.
Yes, but... yeah. I mean, he's really not, but, you know, he's like, I don't know. I did like Piscatella for a while, and it's like maybe the later episodes are kind of clouding my judgment on him, but I did like him for a while. The very first episode, I really liked him, and then I think it...
Oh, I thought he would be a good guy mm-hmm. at first. Also, I did, but it kind of seems like, oh, you can only break the law and laugh at someone if I'm breaking the law and laughing
right.
at someone.
Right, but he's, well... Regardless, he's never really laughed. Like he doesn't really have a lot of humor to him, Piscatella. He's like nope. He's never really laughing. He's just like, you know, he's doing his job and he's maintaining order, but he's also, you know, I don't know. To me, he like actually cared a little bit in that moment. Like he was like, you can't just let someone have a psychotic break. But then he was going to bring her down to psych. So who really knows? He just wanted to maintain yeah. like have no chaos in his yard. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely a really interesting character.
Yeah.
And we'll see, you know, we'll see where he goes as the season goes on, as we will with Lolly. But Lolly, you know, at the end, she, you know, it definitely, every episode kind of, like I said, as I'm watching them over as we're doing the podcast, you know, Lolly is definitely a really big part of kind of she's a big piece to the puzzle with what's going on in this whole season and kind of the end game of the season. But she's, you know, I really love her character. I think she's really great.
Yeah, I love Lori Petty. She's amazing. She played a huge part in this season.
Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she's really, like, and she's, you know, I think I've said it or other people have said it on the podcast before, but she's, you know, definitely a really great actress, and she brings it yeah. all to the table, and she's definitely, you know, she's, like, lovable, but she's also believable as her character, and she, you know, her and Healy definitely play off each other. I don't know his name. Michael Harney, I think, is the name of the guy who plays Healy, and they play off each other really nicely, so I like mm-hmm. seeing that. It's an interesting dynamic.
I actually haven't seen her out of character. I just imagine she speaks the same
way. I actually haven't seen her out of character mm-hmm. either. I know there's like some interviews with her online, but I don't know if they're taped. They might just be like in like written format. But she kind of mm-hmm. talked the same way. I don't know if you saw A League of Their Own, and I've talked about this before, but have you ever seen that movie? She's like the girl Kit. No. Well, she kind of talks the same way in that, like a very similar way in that movie. So I'm mm-hmm. thinking maybe that's the way she really talks, which is kind of neat. But maybe not. I don't know. I'm not sure because I've never. Mm-hmm. I should find a video of her online or something.
Yeah. I'll have to look up some interviews.
Yeah, I didn't see her. I watch a lot of like the late night shows, and I didn't really see her on any of the late night shows promoting Orange Is the New Black. So maybe they didn't. That's like she was not a spokesperson for the show or something. Mm-hmm. Or they wanted to like keep her involvement mm-hmm. a surprise, because a lot of stuff definitely goes on with her as things go on, and Healy's mm-hmm. you know, her and Healy definitely play off each other a lot as things go towards the end of the season. All right. Well, I was trying to do a thing where we ended with like pop culture moments, but like this episode didn't really have too many pop culture moments, so I'm like I'm at a loss. Nope. I'm like I don't even remember. I mean, I guess Tasty talked a little bit about Beyonce, but I don't know. Did you?
Oh, but sorry. We don't even remember. Oh, I was just gonna say we don't even remember what she asked about Beyonce. We right. just know Beyonce. Oh, yeah, or Oprah.
It was either one. Mentioned. And she had a whole list too, a whole like list of things. And what did Crazy mm-hmm. Crazy Eyes wanted to know about dragons, if they have scales or feathers. I don't know if that was another Game of Thrones. I mean, if it was, dragons definitely have scales because they have scales on Game of Thrones. But but I don't know. I don't know if the mythical characters have scales or feathers. But that was like such a cute question. But yeah, there weren't really any pop culture moments to end on. So, but I guess for now, that's kind of it for this episode. It was definitely like a building episode for more stuff to come. So, we'll talk more about those episodes, you know, in the next couple weeks. But thank you so much for being on. This is, you know, we said it before we started recording, but this is like the, you know, Sandy, you and I work together on Hidden Remote, and this is the first time we've ever had a chance to like actually have a conversation, which is so interesting.
Yeah, outside of
emails. And emails are a little different, I think. So, yeah.
Yes, that.
But it's, you know, it's definitely good to have you. So thank you so much for talking to me today, and we'll you know, talk more as the season goes on, hopefully.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to sign off on the podcast and say goodbye to everyone out there. And then we'll see you next week.